being Tiger Woods was a grind, and it wore him down, and he wasn't so happy in his life as we all assumed he was. You know, if you define success for Tiger as winning tournaments and winning majors, then he should have been over the moon. But I think it became a chore to him, and he lost some of that passion that he had, you know, turn of the century. You know, that helps explain, how did Tiger allow everything to crumble? You know, there's an element of self-sabotage, right? I mean, in this media environment that we're in, did he really think he could get away with it forever? I mean, it's hard to imagine.
Welcome to the Clubhouse Podcast. I'm Shane Bacon, and it's a midweek podcast. Yes, normally running them early in the week, but a story broke and we had to have the writer on. If you've been on the internet this week, especially the last couple days, you've seen Alan Shipnuck's story for SI.com and in the upcoming issue of Sports Illustrated. What happened to Tiger Woods? It's the most vexing question in sports. A lengthy dive into not only Tiger Woods' career now, but where he came from and his amateur days, and really just trying to understand the complex story that is Tiger Woods. And it's interesting, on the eve of the Masters, we're talking about the 472nd ranked player in the world, a 40-year-old whose last PGA Tour win came in April of 2013. That was before Jordan Spieth was even a PGA Tour winner. His last major win coming in June of 2008, 2 years before Rory McIlroy won on the PGA Tour. And when you think about it, Tiger Woods, without another win or another major title, could go down as the most the biggest fall from grace in sports history, not just with golf. So obviously a lot to dive into. If you haven't checked out the story, make sure you read it. It'd probably be worth your time to pause the podcast right now and go knock it out. It's going to take you probably 10, 12, 15 minutes to get through it. It's lengthy. It's 6 pages long. And we talked his story on SI.com and about his legacy and future, and if this new generation of players could potentially run into similar problems with fame like Tiger did. So it was a really interesting conversation. I was really glad we got to get him on the podcast. So here we go, Alan Shipnuck for Sports Illustrated and his viral story, What Happened to Tiger Woods. Alan, thanks for taking a minute to stop in and talk to us.
I'm happy to be here, although certainly Herbert Warren Wind is rolling over in his grave right now. But
I've been catching up on some U.S. Open writing from back in the day to get myself ready for Oakmont, and I'll just say it was a different time back then with the way they wrote about the sport, but not a bad time. It was just it was a lot more elegant, I thought. But anyway, here we are. And first things first, I have to say, people are saying we're in a new golden age of golf. I mean, Jordan Spieth shoots 30 under in the first event of the year, coming off 2 major wins. We've got Rory, we've got Adam Scott. Jason Day and Adam Scott both are trying to really turn the PGA Tour into Australian winners only. Why a story on a man that hasn't teed it up in 2016 for the cover of SI?
Well, you know, he looms large by his absence. You know, this will be the second time in 3 years Tiger hasn't played the Masters. And, you know, it's always the tournament that's defined him, going back to his breakthrough in 97 and all the heroics that followed. So, you know, for you and I who follow golf religiously, you know, Jordan Spieth and Jason Day and these guys are our new deities, right? We're so into what they're doing. The casual fan who's, you know, a subscriber to Sports Illustrated, who maybe only watches the Masters and occasionally the U.S. Open, and those folks, still, Tiger's still their North Star, you know, when they think about the game. And they kind of know he's out of action. He might be hurt. There's been some weird stuff with his chipping, but I think unless you follow it closely like we do, there's still so many questions that remain. And so that was kind of the idea, was the Masters is when the whole sports world thinks about golf, and Tiger's still the biggest star in the game, no matter what, you know, Jason Day or Jordan Spieth does next week. And so it just felt like the right time to catch up with what's happened in his world and try and figure out where he's gone, how did he get there, where he's going, and sort of answer the unanswerable.
And in golf, especially now, I mean, we're seeing players well into their 40s winning big events, contending. Obviously, Phil Mickelson having a big year, and he's 45 years old. Yet you look at Tiger Woods, and this is a guy that, and you wrote perfectly about it, I thought, the way you said, you know, he came back and he won, but he wasn't dominant in his wins. And I thought that was really interesting. Is there still an opportunity? Is there still a chance that there's another comeback in Tiger Woods, in your opinion, especially through your reporting?
I don't think so. You know, I think the Tiger Woods year is over. It's such a tall mountain to climb. And, you know, I get into all these stats in the story, but if you look at 2009, you know, his last healthy year pre-scandal, and you look at 2013, his last, you know, healthy year after the scandal, Tiger was basically 8 shots worse per tournament when you factor in the strokes gained and putting, short game and driving. And 2009 is not even one of his best, you know, 8 years. He was just a lesser player even when he was mostly healthy. There's a lot of factors for that. I don't know if we want to go into all of them in this short time that we have, but you know, this notion that he just has to get his back healthy and he can go back to being number one is wishful thinking. His body's broken down. His technique has deteriorated. He's built up a tremendous amount of scar tissue these last few years. And it just doesn't seem like he has the same desire. You know, the two people who are closest to Tiger the last decade were, you know, Steve Williams and Hank Haney, and both talk about how his work ethic fell off even before the scandal. So, you know, there's just a lot of questions floating around Tiger. There's an element of, you know, wish fulfillment. We'd love to see one more glorious run from Tiger. I mean, how much fun would that be? You know, it's the thrill of a lifetime for all of us to have seen him at his best. And of course, we'd like to get another glimpse. But I think those days are over, and now we have to appreciate what we did have and stop pining for it, and just kind of recognize that time marches on. There's this new generation, and they'll be measured against what Tiger did, but not what he's going to do from this point forward.
Yeah, and the scar tissue thing's interesting because, you know, something I've really preached about Tiger and the new Tiger, post-scandal Tiger, is, you know, this was a guy that never got defeated in his life. I mean, he won everything. He was the most popular athlete the moment, you know, he turned pro in 97 and or 96 and you know, wins the Masters in 97. And all of a sudden, you know, he's on top of the world and another SI cover, you know, in the Hello World commercial. And he finally got defeated. And I thought the Padraig Harrington quote about missing the 8-footer and, you know, it's a lot easier to miss him after you miss the first one. I thought that was really telling because it's another pro saying, you know, another major winner, multiple major winner pro saying, you know, you can see it in him as well. That being said, I did find it interesting that even the people closest to him, the Hank Haneys and such, still say you can't count him out yet. And even after all the things that have happened and the injuries and the time away, it's interesting that even those people that have been around him so much still think maybe he's got one more run in him.
Oh, it's sort of that cult of personality that Tiger created. He was so great. He did so many incredible things. We became almost expected him to do the impossible, and he came through so often that he kind of warped the expectations that are realistic for any athlete and any golfer. And so I think that's just sort of residual magic dust that he sprinkled around the golf world that people still feel like, you know, Tiger was special in a really profound way, but it was always going to end for him at some point, right? You didn't expect it to be when he was 32 or 33. You know, it just seemed like he had an endless future. But you know, if you look at Palmer, if you look at Watson, you know, Trevino, a lot of the greatest players of all time had fairly short windows. I mean, Palmer won all his majors in 6 years. Tiger won more, and he won longer. But it ends for everybody, and you know. There's a quote from Jeff Ogilvie at the end of this story, which, you know, it still moves me when I read it, even though I've read it 100 times now, and just about how you know, Tiger just did things that were unexplainable, you know, like through common sense and golf history and everything else, but it couldn't go on forever. We sort of lost sight of that for a while, but you know, I mean, Arnold's talked about this. Yeah, that pretty amazing interview with Charlie Rose a few years ago, where he said, you know, it's undefinable, that thing that you have that allows you to win, and then when it's gone, you don't even know what it was, but you can't get it back, and that's just where Tiger is now.
And when did you begin? When did you come up with the idea of this piece, and when did you begin the reporting for it?
Well, 1996.
You know. I knew you were going to say that.
You know, Tiger and I turned pro the same year. I came out of UCLA a few months before he came out of Stanford. So our careers have been paralleled all this time. And I've always, of course, followed him. He's loomed over my professional life in a big way. So I'm joking, but I'm not joking. I've always been squirreling away anecdotes and stories and thoughts. But and we've circled around Tiger a lot through the years. You know, it's tough because you know going in you're not going to get any access. I mean, nobody is. So do you want to invest the time and the pages and the resources to do a story where the subject's not going to participate? And sometimes we've just said no, but it just felt like this was the moment we needed to weigh in and check in with Tiger. But it was actually funny. I went down to the Hero World Challenge to write a Jordan Spieth piece for our Sportsman of the Year issue. He was not Sportsman, even though I thought he should have been, but we still did a big feature, and that was kind of my last chance to watch him play and get some time with him. So I was down there, and Tiger, you know, he had that really downbeat press conference, and he was shuffling around like an old man. You know, it wasn't too long since he had his third back surgery, and he just looked so diminished. I was really struck by that. And at the same time, you know, Wright Thompson, great writer for ESPN the magazine, he was down there working on the Tiger story, and I'm buddies of Wright. And when he told me that, I said, "Oh, you poor bastard! That's the worst assignment in the world." You know, oh, a huge Tiger story. Thank God it's you and not me. And in fact, even though he's ostensibly a competitor, I actually gave him a few nuggets from my mental files We gave him a few ideas and even a few phone numbers, I think, because, you know, I like writing. I know how hard a story it is to do. And I come home and, you know, I think it was maybe 10 days later, I get a phone call from our executive editor, John Wertheim. He's like, "What do you think about a big Tiger story?" I was like, "Oh, boy, I love it. It's just genius, boss. You know, we got to do it." And so it's pretty funny how it worked out. And so I started working on it in earnest this golf season. You know, I did interviews at Torrey Pines, at Pebble Beach. I went to the Honda, sniff around, you know, the Woods Jupiter and talk to more players and burn up the phone lines and read a bunch. You know, I've got an entire bookshelf of Tiger books. Some of them, you know, go back to the mid 90s and pulled all those out and reread them. And, you know, I was watching YouTube highlights and old videotapes and, interview notes from many previous stories, and so it's been essentially a 3-month project to, you know, get this story in print.
And and you mentioned in the story that the Tiger declined comment on everything, but he did talk about his foundation. You knew going in, and you've already mentioned it, you knew that access was going to be limited, if anything. I mean, how many times did you reach out to his camp just trying to get something from them, some word, some note? Really, any quote from those guys for this?
Well, I went to him at the beginning and said, "I'm, you know, doing this huge Tiger story, and of course, you know, the dream would be to sit down with them and chop it up." And his agent, Mark Steinberg, wrote back, "Well, he already did the, you know, the Tiger at 40 looking back thing, you know, for his website." You know, those are like the little posts that somebody ghostwrites for Tiger. I was like, "Well, looking for something a little more depth than that." You know, they declined, and that's fine. I mean, you got to make the phone call, but I never really expected to get Tiger. But, you know, I did want this to be a balanced look at who this guy is and all parts of his life. And so I'd never been to the Tiger Woods Learning Center, and I figured this was the time to go down and really check it out. So I spent a day in Anaheim, and massively impressive facility, and the people are great, and the kids that have passed through there are so cool. Really, really loved everything about it. And so I went back to them and said, "Listen, you know, I'm going to be writing about the foundation. Can I at least talk to Tiger about that? I mean, there's no downside there for you guys, right? There's no trap door." And they said, "All right, email us the questions," which, of course, I hate because...
You have no idea who's sending you the answer back.
Yeah, you have no idea who's even typing up the answers. And it's just so sterile. There's no sense of real back and forth, and you can't really follow up. But whatever. So I sent off a bunch of questions and got some answers, which sounded very much like Tiger, having listened to his press conferences for 2 decades. So I'm sure there were his answers in some capacity. But you know, it's better than nothing. I was glad to have his voice in there, and I was happy to get into the foundation stuff because I think it's a very important part of his future, and he sees it as a really big piece of his legacy. So, you know, it's one component in a long story, and I was happy that Tiger at least participated in that.
And I was going to ask you, what new thing did you learn about Tiger, you know, through this 3-month process? But I'm assuming it's probably something about the foundation.
Well, certainly, you know, I've always been aware of it, but I didn't realize the extent that he's supported it with his time and his checkbook. I mean, he's poured at least $25 million into the foundation through the years. But more than that, he cares. You know, he kind of presides over every board meeting. He just kind of insisted they come up with a 5-year plan to export the curriculum internationally. You know, I think the Khan Academy is sort of a model where they're not going to be able to bring kids from impoverished countries to Anaheim, but they can the science and technology based curriculum they can make free and available, and that can reach a lot of kids and a lot of stuff like that, which I thought was really cool and impressive. But I followed Tiger my whole life, and I thought I knew everything about the guy, but connecting all the dots was really edifying for me. I think the biggest takeaway I got from having some long conversations with Hank Haney and with Sean Foley and a lot of players who are close to Tiger is just the sense that he's a kind of at peace now, that being Tiger Woods was a grind and it wore him down, and that maybe he wasn't so happy in his life as we all assumed he was. You know, if you define success for Tiger as winning tournaments and winning majors, then he should have been over the moon. But I think it became a chore to him, and he lost some of that passion that he had, you know, turn of the century. And, you know, that helps explain, you know, how did Tiger allow everything to crumble? You know, there's an element of self-sabotage, right? I mean, in this media environment that we're in, did he really think he could get away with it forever? I mean, it's hard to imagine. And, you know, there's a quote from Haney that I thought was really powerful about, you know, if he doesn't want to be Tiger Woods anymore, you know, the only way this whole thing can end is if he self-destructs. And, you know, it could have taken a number of different forms, but we know how it did. And, you know, I wound up having a lot of empathy for Tiger, that, you know, his life was more of a challenge than probably any of us could imagine. Not that we need to get out the violin strings, I mean, but it wasn't easy being who he was and competing on that level and the toll that it took. And, you know, one of the questions I asked a lot of, you know, the guys who were really close to him, the Jason Gores, who grew up in junior golf, the Charles Howell, who's played, you know, 50 or 60 just casual rounds at Isleworth, Steve Stricker, who was his private, you know, putting coach, essentially. You know, I asked all these guys, have you ever had dinner with Tiger? And they all said, no, not once. Like, and Gore said, God, I would have loved that. I wish he would have invited me. You know, that would have been so much fun. I said, well, why didn't you invite him? He's like, it doesn't work that way with Tiger.
Yeah, the irony sits there since he, you know, he started a restaurant in Florida. He doesn't need
dinner
with anybody.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that's, I mean, it's just, he was, by personality and by necessity and by the demands of fame and everything else, he just really isolated himself. And, you know, I mean, I asked all these guys, who are Tiger's friends? And no one seemed to know that either. And so you get this picture of this guy who's pretty lonely and pretty isolated. And the one thing that always defined him has been taken away from him. And, you know, you have to wonder how much he's struggling with all that. You know, I mean, he pretty candidly said he just sits around playing video games a lot at home. He's in this giant dream house he built with his, you know, his now ex-wife. And I mean, certainly loves being a dad, and his kids are very important to him. But, you know, half the time they're not there. And so it's not quite, you know, Charles Foster Kane, but, you know, you can kind of see, it's easy to imagine Tiger feel a little lonely and isolated now, and the golf has been taken away from him. And it's sad, frankly.
Yeah, and you know, Tiger lived through the internet age to an extent. I mean, when you think about when he came up, and then you think about the scandal, you know, that was a time where, you know, the internet was taking off, and that was a time where the stories were flying around. You mentioned the front pages of the New York Post 20-something in a row of Tiger Woods and the scandal. And I think you even mentioned it was the biggest internet scandal that's ever happened, is what happened with Tiger Woods. Do you fear for these young players, the Rorys, the Jordan Spieths, that have lived through this their entire time? I mean, you can't get away from it. This is every day. Everything you do is going to be documented and posted and taken a picture of. I mean, is there a fear that there's burnout that's going to come quicker to the young players?
No question. I think we're going to see that. Golf is going to be more like tennis. You know, you have to win early. You have to win a lot, because these players are going to peak younger and they're going to burn out faster. And this notion that you're going to be like Vijay Singh and play into your 40s and early 50s, I don't see it. You know, it starts at a much earlier age now with AJGA and big time college golf. You have guys turning pro when they're 19. The international travel, the media demands, the huge money is a complicating factor. It just makes life in some ways easier, but also bigger and more complicated. It's just, look at Spieth. He's dragging up and down the fairway right now. He's totally burnt out.
Nice.
I think it's a short-term thing, but, Rory, in his case, is slightly more troubling because he does seem to have lost some of his passion for not only the game, but just the life that comes with it. He had that quote about how, when he was younger, he just lived for tournaments. He couldn't wait to get to the course, and now he looks forward to his weeks off. And nothing wrong with that, but it's a long career theoretically, and I think these guys are going so hard, so young, and they're making stupid money by the time they're 22. I mean, Jordan Spieth, what did he make? $55 million last year.
Right.
He clearly has a passion to be great and for excellence, but, it's just, I think, once again, Tiger unwittingly is the template. It turns out that his career was pretty much over by 33. And, I think it's definitely a concern. I mean, social media is only one part of it, but there is that sense that you're always in the public eye. And, remember that when after Phil won the Masters, I guess it was in 2010, and they snapped the girl at Krispy Kreme drive-thru snapped him in the green jacket. And yeah. What he said, that was when I really realized that everyone is media.
Right.
The world is media now.
And look at the stories that are headlines right now. I mean, Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler hang out on a boat, and that's across every internet platform. And it's not somebody retweeting it. It is a generated post with that picture being the quote unquote story. And I mean, if you're those guys, you almost feel like you'd say, "Hey, everybody, put your cell phone in a hat, and we're going to hide it because at least give me a chance to enjoy myself for 4 hours without knowing." And I mean, listen, they're posting it. I mean, it's on them, but
right. That's the irony is, it cuts both ways. They obviously Spieth, the Ricky, they're excellent on social media, and that's part of how they connect with fans and grow their brand and all that. So it can help them as well. But, it's an issue with these golfers. I mean, you look at Bubba Watson, he was a late bloomer. He didn't find himself till his early to mid-30s, and that's going to be an increasing rarity. Tom Watson, he didn't know how to win. He didn't know how to play golf until he got on tour. It took him a long time to figure it out. But it's so cutthroat now. You can't really spend 5 years apprenticing on the PGA Tour. You'd be lucky to be on the Latin American Tour.
Right.
You have to come out as more of a fully formed player, and that's okay. But it starts the clock ticking a lot sooner. I mean, a lot of the old timers have this belief. You have a finite number of putts you're going to make in your life, right?
Right.
And these guys are using them up at an earlier age. So it's going to be very interesting to see how a guy like Spieth can navigate these choppy waters for the next 15, 20 years, or if he can still be relevant, deep into his 30s. I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if he did. But again, as you mentioned, I mean, we're already seeing Jordan Spieth kind of go through a lull. And I mean, I know it's only been 2 months since his 2.5 months since his last win, but I mean, it's a little bit of a lull, and as you mentioned, it shows on his face. I mean, you see it. I mean, you see it in the press conferences. You see it, when he's out on the golf course and things aren't going his way. And I mean, it's a little bit different than the 19-year-old kid we saw. And I mean, it's only been 2.5 years ago. So I mean, it's just the pressures and demands seem to be high, and it obviously can't be helped with social media. But I wanted to ask you, In your opinion, just going back to Tiger for a minute, in your opinion, is Tiger the greatest golfer we've ever seen?
Well, the way I phrase it is Tiger's the most dominant golfer of all time, and Nicklaus has had the greatest career. You know, Jack's longevity and his ability to do it for almost a quarter century, and, you know, winning majors when he was a kid and when he was almost a grandfather. I mean, you have to give a nod to Jack, but, you know, Tiger played at a higher level than Nicklaus ever did. Sam Snead, you know, I mean, Tiger had six seasons where he won six tournaments or more. I mean, that's dominant. Jack only did that twice. You know, Tiger winning 7 out of 11 majors in one stretch.
That's insane.
You know, it's incredible. Now, Ben Hogan played at a level that Tiger did for a window of 2 to 3 years where his best golf is as good as Tiger's was, but Tiger did it longer than Hogan ever did. And so, you know, I think Tiger is the most dominant player by far, but you certainly, you know, you have to factor in Hogan's Army service. He hadn't lost those 5 years in the bus crash. You know, that's a big what if. But, to me, Tiger is the most dominant golfer, period. You can give Nicklaus the overall nod, but even others might say, listen, you know, given the margins by which Tiger won his majors, the deeper fields, the equipment advances, you know, maybe Tiger's even greater than Jack. And, you know, the case can be made either way. But
yeah. If Tiger would have had 4 or 5 more healthy seasons, who would have known? I mean, after all of the research you've done and all the reporting and talking to people, I mean, are we going to see Tiger Woods play pro golf again?
Yeah, who knows? I feel like, you know, for Tiger, I think this time away is he's weighing all of these questions, and I don't know if he knows the answer to that. You know, you look at the last couple of years were so brutal for Tiger, with obviously the injuries, but also the chip yips, you know, shooting 85 at the Memorial, 80 at Chambers Bay, missing a cut by a mile at the Old Course. On one hand, I'm sure he would appreciate to have a better finale and go out with a more of a grace note. Then again, maybe that was so traumatic. He's like, do I really want to go through this again? And the incredible amount of effort it takes, physical rehab and trying to get the game sharp just to come back and get my teeth kicked in.
Right.
You know, there's a great quote from Haney in this story about this is the right time for Tiger to walk away, because the narrative becomes, you know, injuries ended his career and cost him a chance to catch Jack. And that sounds better than he lost his desire or just threw it all away with the reckless behavior in his personal life. And, you know, there's a lot to it. You know, Tiger, he can walk away now and just say his body was broken, and he doesn't have to suffer out there on the golf course anymore. And he was definitely suffering. So I think he's trying to figure out if it's worth it. Does he want to try and climb the mountain one more time? I'm not sure he knows that answer, and I certainly don't.
and lastly, you know, it's 30 years or so since, I guess we're coming up on it, since the greatest Masters of all time. Are you, do you see the Jack moment at Augusta is the only thing that could match that in the sense of drama, Tiger coming back one more time and having a run and winning a major?
Well, that would be epic. I mean, obviously, it would be without a doubt the greatest achievement of his career if he could come back and win another major. Everything he's been through, it would dwarf the, you know, Torrey Pines Open, but it's, I think the best thing we could hope for is he could just come back and be somewhat relevant. And but, you know, if you get a playoff with Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, I mean, that's the best case scenario, I think, going forward. I'm not counting on Tiger for anything.
Me neither. It sure would be interesting. Alan, I appreciate you obviously taking some time. If you guys haven't read it yet, What Happened to Tiger Woods is on si.com. It'll be in on bookshelves, what, this week, this next coming week?
Yeah, subscribers will get it probably tomorrow, and it's definitely it's on SI.com, and it's on golf.com. It's in your tablet. It's in your ear. We're beaming it directly into your brain from SI headquarters. So
You'll see it. You will see it. We'll tweet it out as well with a link here to the podcast. You can follow him as well at Alan Shipnuck. And again, make sure you give him a follow and follow him as Masters Week comes up, because he always has great stuff and one of the best golf writers out in really the entire world. So we appreciate it. And again, thanks for this story. It was a lot of fun to read.
Thanks for having me, Shane. This was a blast.
So there you have it. Alan Shipnuck, nice enough to join us and give us some great stuff on Tiger and really the story and you know, kind of his process in writing it, and really about you know, what comes when you pretty much take on the biggest name in all of sports still, which is crazy to think. Again, this is a guy that hasn't won a major championship, pretty much how we define great players, since 2008. And yet the moment he does anything, the moment he tweets anything, the moment he posts a video online, you know, it completely takes over the golf world and a lot of the times the sporting world as well. So the story's great. Again, if you haven't read it, make sure you go to SI.com and check it out. It's definitely worth your time. Even if you're not a big golf fan, definitely worth your time as a sports fan. And again, thanks to Alan. If you have any questions for us for upcoming podcasts, make sure you hit us up on Twitter at the Clubhouse Pod or use hashtag ClubhouseSB. And we'll be back next week. We have a huge, huge guest for next week for Masters Week, and I'm really excited about it. So make sure you look out for that. And again, a great chat with Alan. So that'll do it for us here at the Clubhouse. Have a great weekend. Get some golf in. It's Masters Weekend next week.